Hey everyone, how we doing? Welcome to another episode of So NWA, the podcast where we dive into stories, people, and places that make Northwest Arkansas one of the best corners in the country.
That's right, guys. And I'm Enrique, and I'm here with my brother, Juan Carlos.
That's right. Each week, we sit down with the movers, makers, and everyday legends who are shaping the life in the Ozarks, from real estates to restaurants, to local legends, to hidden gems. We sit down with the people who make this place one of the most desired places to live, and we share their story one episode at a time.
That's right, guys. So whether you're from here, you're new here, or you just love a good story, you're in the right place. So let's go ahead and get into this episode today.
Definitely. So folks, today we have a very cool guest in our studio. I had met this person a few weeks ago by a mutual friend. Shout out to Christina Meister. We did an episode with her. She is the principal of Grace Hill. And one day she mentioned to me that her friend was thinking about starting a podcast and asked if I could share some tips. So we ended up all getting together, grabbing some coffee. And when I got to hear the story of this person, it just deeply impacted me. And I said, wow, I would love to have you on my podcast, right? Or our podcast, excuse me. And I'll tell you guys, it's a really good story. But this person, she's done everything from working in education to becoming one of the top leaders at Walmart. And now she's stepping into the next chapter of her life as the founder of the Soulfire Collective. One of my favorite things that she has on her LinkedIn is a quote saying, unlocking the potential in people and watch what becomes possible. So I'm excited to hear her story. I'm excited to share her story with y'all. Everyone, a warm welcome to Mariah Newman. What's going on?
Awesome. I'm so happy to be here. Super excited.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for coming. It means a lot already. Yeah. And just again, a shout out to Christina for getting us together.
So. Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, he's been super hyped for this episode. And so I'm looking forward to our time together today. So thank you for joining us.
Yes. I'm again, really excited to be here. Really humbled.
There you go. That's what it's all about, right?
It is. It is. So, but you know, as always, what's new? What's new in your world, Mariah? What's going on?
Everything is new. I feel like every day I'm in uncharted territory in this chapter of my life.
Okay.
So what's new is literally everything. Every day is not scripted. And
there you go.
It's kind of fun, exciting, exhilarating, but a little scary as well. So
yeah, that's what I hear from people who are starting their own thing, right? They have that little bit of fear, but I like that regardless of that feeling, they're taking that chance on themselves, right? So anytime I hear that, I'm like, oh, that's good. You know, you're taking your ambition and you want to grow as a person and you want to grow this business. So I'm glad to know you're going in this uncharted territory, but with a positive attitude, it seems. So
sure. That's good. Yeah. I think that's how I define courage, right? Is leaning into what you're supposed to be doing, even though you're afraid, leaning into the right thing, even though it makes you nervous. Mm-hmm. And courage is something that I highly value and aspire to be.
Yeah. That's how I feel right before a cold call.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no, that cold call, man. I see that number, then I just get scared, man.
That's funny. You know, talking about courage, you remember we had Chris Sparks weeks ago, and one of the things that really stuck by was him saying, and I think it was him, he said something along the lines of, you start living life when you go into the unknown. And I think he's referring to just trying new things. And just doing it, and that's where you live life the most, if that makes sense, right? In a good way.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, you know, I think I've seen online many times, what do people say, that nothing changes if nothing changes, like literally. So if you keep your habits exactly the same, but you want things to be better, or mm-hmm. you want to improve yourself,
very
true. You got to do something different,
right? Very true, whether very true. Yeah,
it's one thing or everything that you do every day, so
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very common way to go about it.
No, that's good. So again, Mariah, thank you so much for being here. Enrique, what's going on with you, man? It's been a week or two since we saw each other.
It's been a while, man. Yeah. It's been good. You know, just I haven't shared this on here yet, but I've been working on a property with my fiance, and I think I've mentioned it on here. I'm not sure, but we're almost done with getting it fixed up. So I actually got to go to Home Depot after this and shop for who knows what. So But yeah, just been working on that. It's been good, you know, working on real estate like always.
Yeah, yeah.
Spending time with my family. So
it's good. It's
been well, man. What about you, Juan Carlos? How have things been with you?
Man, it's good. Last week, I had the opportunity to go to California with my wife. It was my little brother's graduation from university. He graduated in biology, I think, if I remember right. I know I'm not too familiar with all those degrees. And yeah.
There you go.
And he had been working. He has worked so hard for that degree. I can just, you know, he's 21. And I just to say how proud I am of him is like an understatement. I can just remember seeing him as a 5-year-old, 8-year-old throughout my life. And, you know, he's 15 and now he's 21. And we had a little party at the house and his girlfriend showed up. And it's just so funny to see, you know, his little brother who I envision, right, who I see as a young kid, but now mm-hmm. he's like a young man. And I, you know, I get emotional like that. That's, I think me and my dad, we got emotional for it. So we got, it was a really quick trip, but yeah, everything was good and good time with them. But that was just our recent event. And that was, you know, when you travel, you take like a day or two to reset. Right.
Oh man. Yeah. Usually every time, you know, you come back and you just want
to, I just want
to get back to the real world. Just
sleep in, you know, sleep in and get the house prepared and do laundry and get food ready.
Laundry for sure.
Yeah. So it's like, oh yeah. So that was kind of my last few days, but everything's been going good. Summer's been going good. The heat has finally arrived here in Northwest Arkansas. The rain has gone away for now. So
for now,
yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I think it's like 2 weeks though. No rain. Just all sunshine.
So. Yeah, which has not
knock happened. On something.
Very true.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Knock on wood. There you go.
We've had a lot of rain.
We have
a little too much, in my
opinion.
Yeah.
So I'm glad for the break, but it's gonna be hot. So we'll see how it
goes. They said we have gotten more rain in the last 6 months than we did all of last year.
I believe it.
Yeah, I believe it too. So, but Mariah here. Let's jump into these random questions that we do. Let's see. What's your opinion on naps?
I love naps.
Ah, there it is. We love a good nap.
I love them.
Okay.
I think they're restorative. I think they're awesome.
We need them.
Yes.
As you get older, you need your naps.
Yeah.
I will say.
I fought them as a child and I honor them as an adult.
There it is. So. Let's see. Enrique, what do you have an unusual fear of?
An unusual fear of?
Yeah.
I guess a ladder.
Oh, a ladder, like you might fall.
I'm scared of unstable surfaces, right? I'm not scared of heights per se, but if I'm standing on something that's a little wobbly, it freaks me out, like a ladder especially. You know, sometimes when you have to use a ladder outside and it's the ground's uneven and it's shaking all over the place, that terrifies me. So scared of ladders, I guess.
Ladders, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see.
Do you have one for you?
Yeah, what about you? Yeah.
Fear, open water. Like the open sea water, you know, like the deep ocean.
No cruises for you?
No, I'll do them. I just like swimming, you know, like if I had to, would I jump off a boat if I need to? Yes. And like swim to shore? Yes. But it definitely is a fear to swim out there and who knows what's, you know, going through your feet or legs or whatever.
That is true. When you're swimming, you get that one thing that like touches your foot or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the worst
feeling. I did see Deep Blue Sea with Samuel Jackson and LL Cool J, like back in the day.
It's an older one.
Yeah, it's an old movie.
I don't think I've seen that movie.
I did see that at a really young age, so I think.
Oh, so that's what got you freaked out.
I think that's what it is. Like,
hey, that's fair, shark, man. You know? That's fair.
So, well, folks, you know, definitely want to dive into our main discussion here with Mariah and her story and, you know, just the bits and pieces that I know. Like I said, I think it's going to be a fantastic story. So, Mariah, tell us and tell the audience a little bit about your journey. What brought you to Arkansas? Who you are as a person? What you're doing?
That might take us the whole hour.
Oh man, I believe it.
I'll do my best to be succinct.
Okay, you're good.
But there's a lot of twists and turns that led me to where I am.
Okay.
And if I were to go back, I don't think I ever would have guessed that they would have been the twists and turns that would have been in my life or that I would have faced. I grew up in a small town in Kansas and my mom was disabled and my dad worked a lot and I felt invisible and trapped a lot of my life because of my situation. And I was super nerdy by my own definition. We did haircuts in the kitchen with those kitchen shears that had like the orange handles. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes uneven and wore the same clothes often. And I remember going into my advisor for college. I went to a state school in my hometown. And when they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I said that I wanted to change the world. And I said that I wanted to make an impact. And they said, okay, well, what do you want to study? And I said, well, I'm thinking like maybe work for Walmart corporate or the Federal Reserve. And they're like, those are two very different things. but from my 18-year-old brain, I thought, you know, those are the perspective. That's the perspective I had, is that Walmart drives impact across the United States and the government, you know, it drives impact. Sure. And so I studied quantitative economics. And upon graduation, I was offered a job at both places and turned both down, because the first boy that was interested in me basically in my entire life asked me to follow him to the middle of nowhere, Kansas, so he could coach football. And it was his hometown, but it had really transformed since the time he was there. And the town in Kansas, it's called Liberal Kansas, but mostly Hispanic, fueled by pig farms, beef packing plants, high level of poverty, low social economic status. And what I found pretty quickly is that my quantitative economics degree wasn't going to serve me that well in that community. My parents were not pleased that I followed the football playing farm boy that looked really good in football pants versus following my big dreams. But I was excited. And as luck would have it, I ended up becoming a teacher. I started teaching business in the high school, and I was quickly confronted with my bias. I quickly learned that I thought I knew what it was like to be poor. I thought I knew what it was like to not have access to things. I thought I knew what it was like to live a hard life. And what I realized pretty quickly is that I grew up with a lot of privilege that a lot of people didn't have. And I made a lot of mistakes in that period of my life, made a lot of assumptions based on my own perspective. Specifically, I remember one kid that will forever remain front of my brain and is one of, will forever be one of those big boulders in the stream of my life that helped change the direction and the way the water flows, was close to expulsion. Grades were bad, discipline issues, attendance was bad. And when I pulled this kiddo in and just said, like, what are you thinking? My parents would have whipped me if I behaved like this or I treated my education like this. I quickly learned that this kiddo was living in a trailer that didn't have electricity. And his mom was working in restaurants for cash when she could. Dad wasn't around, younger siblings. And he told me that when the kids were asleep, he would do his homework by a streetlight. And when it got too dark, his homework would get sloppy. And when it got too cold, he wouldn't finish. And when he would come to school, he would get yelled at because his homework wasn't done or it was sloppy. And that story, it still gives me chills. And it changed me in a lot of ways to recognize that everyone has a story. And you see those pictures and memes on social media of the iceberg, and how so much of us is underneath the surface, and you just see a certain view or perspective. And there's so much more beneath the surface. And what you guys are doing here, asking people's stories, learning about people, that's what drives connection. And that's what brings people together. And that's what builds trust. And in my mind, that's where potential lives, is through that connection. As a business teacher in this community, it was the lowest performing school district in Kansas, and a lot of English language learners and pretty traditional education system at that time. Good teachers, but a lack of connection, a lack of, I don't want to say empathy, but awareness maybe of...
Just not maybe understanding where they were coming from. The relatability wasn't there.
Even myself, when I started teaching, you know, I'm trying to teach things that these kids, they don't care about because they're hungry or they don't know where they're sleeping, et cetera. What I started to do in my classroom is started to leverage the resources I had to dot connect for students. And what I started to learn is that my students in my classroom, their test scores started to go up, their grades started to go up, their attendance started to go up, in all of the classes in math, English, science, social studies. And I was business. So I was like what I'd call gen pop or general population because it was a graduation requirement. I had ninth through 12th grade. I had a mixture of everybody, not just like the super smart kids, not the, you know, kids that are really struggling. I had everybody and they were all doing well across the board or doing better. And when people came into my classroom from the State Department or from administration to ask what I was doing, it came back to connection. It came back to building relationships. It came back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs and figuring out how I could send a backpack home with a kiddo during the week or on a weekend that was filled with food that nobody would know about so that they could have meals, or going into the beef packing plant with a translator to talk to parents about the free and reduced lunch forms, because there was a fear that if they filled them out, they might get deported or get in some kind of trouble if they didn't have the right documentation. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. It feels like it should be common sense, I guess. But once you connect those dots, I didn't realize the impact is when you start to have kids that have meals and have shelter and feel like someone cares about them, their potential just is through the roof. And so the same student that I mentioned earlier ended up the next year taking AP classes, college classes, the senior year, representing the school in a program called JAG, which was Jobs for American Graduates, I believe is what it's called, got to go to Washington, D.C. And, you know, just really amazing. And there's a million stories just like him. One of the students that I had during that time period is now just graduated with his MD. One of the young ladies is an optometrist. And these are students that came from families that didn't even believe that type of life was possible. Yeah. And the parents, many of them never went to high school. And so changing the cycle of poverty in that community and just the possibilities for generations to come. After being a business teacher, I moved into a school counselor role. Eventually dean of students at a Hispanic serving institution or a community college in town, where during that time, one of the things that I got to do was work with a collective group of people that helped change how we taught students. So we went from traditional sit and get lecture for an hour and a half, which was pretty ineffective. If you think about knowing one or more languages and having to translate a lecture, it's a lot. But being able to do things in a hands-on project-based way is more meaningful, experiential. And we actually got FedEx to donate a jet that we could turn into a classroom so students could learn about transportation and learn about engineering in a completely different environment, which then you could see parents wanting to see this jet and students wanting to come to school and things like that. And it started to change just how education was viewed in our community, which then started to change everything. Because then the state schools in Kansas who were lacking diversity on their campuses were like, hey, these students in this community are doing really well academically. They come from diverse backgrounds. We're lacking diversity on our campuses. Let's figure out how we can build a pipeline to get them to come to our schools. With the community college, we were able to give tuition grants for people that lived in the county. And so we started changing the college going culture. And even with the community college, it may not be a degree. It could be a certificate. It could be a certified nurse's aide. And they were getting a certificate or mechanics or things like that, which again, changing the cycle of poverty and helping them to be active in their community and give back to the community after high school. And so it was really transformative for me to be a part of that and to experience it. At the community college, I had a mentor that was profoundly impactful to me. I actually have courage tattooed on my wrist and his handwriting because he told me I was the most courageous person he had ever met. He was my boss and taught me a lot about racial injustice and taught me a lot about the challenges that many people face. Even though my experiences had taught me a lot, he helped me to understand from an academic perspective, from a historical perspective, and to connect things that didn't quite make sense for me, and encouraged me to further my education and I ended up writing my dissertation on closing the college completion gap for Black males because of experiences I was having at the community college with the basketball team. Before I went there, or before I worked at the community college, the basketball team didn't have host families. And a lot of that was due to a fear. There weren't a lot of Black people in the community, and this fear that these kids are going to rob them, or, you know, that they do drugs, or that they're bad because it's unknown. And so I ended up taking in all 16 of them. And as a white dean of students, to be the host mom for 16 Black boys over 6 foot.
Yeah.
And they showed me a different side or perspective of the injustices that they had lived with, rather than just the Hispanic lens that I got to lean into for 13 years. I then got to see this perspective of why they preferred that I drive versus them drive. And why, like when we were in Walmart, they would walk with their hands outside of their pockets because they had had experiences in their life where they had been accused of things when they actually hadn't done anything wrong, but had learned behaviors through those experiences.
Right.
And through getting to know these people and getting to know their stories, I was changed and my heart was changed and how I viewed the world and relationships and connection changed. Mm-hmm. And as a dean of students at the college, I remember I had been there about a year and a half and I got a phone call from a recruiter at Walmart home office. And I actually hung up on the recruiter the first time because I was like, why are they calling me? You know, I'm doing this dean of students thing. It's like the dream job. My husband at the time was coaching football. She called back, visited with her, and I ended up moving to Arkansas a couple weeks later for a project management job at Walmart home office. And I thought I had made it. Like, just Arkansas had trees and water and green grass. And where I was from in Kansas was very flat with no trees and no water and like desert-like. And I was like, I cannot believe I get to live somewhere that people vacation. Like, this is amazing. And Sam Walton had always been a hero of mine. And reading all of his books and learning about Walmart my entire life felt like a full circle moment because I had always aspired to work at Walmart home office. And when I moved here, it was hard. The transition was hard. The acclimating from education to corporate America was hard. Moving away from a community that knew who I was, where I had credibility and where I had learned so much was hard. It was exciting, but it was hard. And the newness and the novelty of everything was fun. I also recognized the role that I went into Walmart. I was talking about this with somebody this morning. It was project management, which was a perfect first role because I got exposure to all sorts of things across Walmart. That's where I learned about merchandising, truly, from everything, from every single perspective. But it was also very process driven. And the roles that I'd been in professionally prior to that were me creating the process and me being given a blank canvas and said, based on what you know, what would you create? And so it was hard for me to fit into someone else's process. But it was learning, right? Throughout my time at Walmart, I got to experience, very fortunately, a lot of different parts of the business. I went from merchandising to talent or global people, and then moved to global governance, which is ethics and compliance. And literally when they told me I was moving there, I cried because I was like, sometimes I park in visitor parking. You do not want me in ethics and compliance. Because at this point in my life, I had gotten divorced and gotten full custody of my kiddos, which is a turn I never thought I would take in my life. My ex-husband had signed over parental rights on my kiddos. And so I became the only emergency contact. I became the only one packing lunch boxes, the only one doing school drop-off, and the only one like trying to navigate this career and these two little humans. And so thus the visitor parking sometimes, because the old Walmart with parking It was hard. Yeah, and if you know about drop off in Bentonville, like it's like one school is like this 15 minute window of time. And then this school is this 15 minute window of time.
Yep.
And you can't drop off before this 15 minute window of time at either school. And so like you have to time it from just one.
Right.
I'm scared to tell Juan Carlos this as he has a baby brewing. You know, luckily you're in Pea Ridge, but if you're in Bentonville schools, and Bentonville schools are amazing, but for a single mom who's trying to be successful in a career where when sometimes the meetings start at 7:30 a.m. mm-hmm. and you want to be present and you want to be intentional, it's really hard to balance.
Yeah.
So from there, from global governance, I moved to global tech. Global tech moved to supply chain at Sam's. Mm-hmm. And from there, I moved to operations at Walmart. I would say that I bled blue.
There you go.
Some people called me the mayor of Walmart, loved it.
So you were full-fledged 100%
Walmart. Yeah. And the roles that I took were primarily transformation roles. Mm-hmm. I liked to go in when things were messy, liked to find a way to put things back together.
Oh, wow.
And typically the way that I was able to put things back together was by seeing the potential in the humans and figuring out how to help them reach their potential collectively. And when you have a group of humans that know the direction they're going and know the mission in front of them or the vision, and they all are equipped with resources and support and a great environment and a leader that's telling them that they can be whatever they want to be and helping them, everything is limitless. So the secret was really just how do you get these people, you know, give them direction, give them support, give them the right environment, and then get out of their way and help them with whatever they need, you know?
Wow. Speaking my language, I love it.
Yeah.
Would they ever react negatively to any of changes that you would suggest? That's what I would like to know if that was ever a situation you had to deal with.
Daily.
Some people don't like change, right?
Most people. Yeah. And I would argue that it's not that people don't like change. I think that people are afraid of loss. People are afraid that they're going to lose something, whether it's control or familiarity or
familiarity.
You comfort, maybe.
Comfort.
Comfort, yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of fear that that is an undercurrent in many places. And it's up to the leader to take that fear away, to take fear off the table. Correct. And that's where success lives. And so in my experiences at Walmart, I made some really great connections. I remember one time I was moving into a role at Sam's Club and I was in an interview. And one of the questions was, there's going to be a lot of people that are adamantly and very loudly opposed to change. And your whole job is to optimize and to change. How are you going to handle that? And so that was a common question in roles that I went into because people were like, how are you going to make a difference? How are you going to make this better?
Right.
And my answer was typically the same. And that is one person at a time. You know, you find one supporter and build credibility with one person and you link arms with that person. And then you bring, it's like Red Rover, right? Like, you guys remember that game, right?
Oh, that's a throwback. Man, sure.
Right.
Yeah, you hurt some wrists in there, right?
Oh, it did. Right.
Sure,
right.
Gosh.
But then you find people, there's actually a YouTube video that's called like the Shirtless Dancing Man and his lessons on leadership.
I know what you're talking about. I think.
And if you watch it, whoever filmed it was not a great film person because it's kind of shaky. But the whole theme is this guy is dancing on this like grassy knoll.
Oh, I've seen that video.
And he's dancing like crazy, like, and all these people are watching him. But all it takes is one person to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And once there's two people there, then others feel more comfortable joining in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a fear of doing it by yourself. It takes one person to be the lone nut is what they say in this YouTube video. And the second person that comes along is the first follower. And in the video, it says it's less about the lone nut. It's more about the first follower because they make it safe for other people to follow.
Yeah.
And so in places of transformation or change, I was like, let me find the first follower, someone who's influential. Let me build a relationship, build credibility, build trust. And once I have that first follower, then it comes along, right?
Would it take you a while to find that person whenever you were trying to maybe find that first follower? Or was it pretty natural at this point in your career?
At that point in my career, it became easier. I also, when I went to Global Tech, I remember asking one of the people that's still a mentor today that I actually had dinner with this week. I asked him, I said, I need you to give me the 6 most influential leaders across Global Tech. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, here's our list of high performers. And I said, that's not what I'm asking. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm asking the people that people follow. I'm asking the people that are admired, that people look up to. And he had to think about it because that wasn't a question that he was asked often. Mm-hmm. But they had hired me to do organizational transformation. Like, that literally was my role. And I'm going into this space in tech where the personalities were very different than mine. And I knew that I was going to be an acquired taste and I needed to be effective quickly. And so I needed to build relationships quickly with the right people. And I didn't have time, transparently, to sort through 14,000 people that made up Global Tech. And so I asked for the shortcut and said, help me find these people.
Yeah.
And those people helped me make the difference, because once I won them over, I think I even showed them the shirtless dancing man video.
Yeah.
But once I helped them to see the mission and helped them to see, you know, where we were going and how we could transform, they bought in and they brought others with them. Mm-hmm. And so in my career earlier, it took a lot longer to figure out who those people were. I got burned a lot, made a lot of mistakes. I'll tell you that in transformation, I believe that it's like half the people like you half the time and half the people don't. And in Walmart, I had to get thicker skin. I had to realize that it's not personal. They may not like my decision, or they may not like, or may not have the whole story. Mm-hmm. And just because they don't like me now doesn't mean they're not going to like me soon, you know? And for example, in the supply chain role, I always made the joke that supply chain had a vision of how we should clear the ports of all this inventory left over from COVID. Merchandising teams had a vision, and operations had a vision, and all three visions were different. And so it was like, if I made a decision to flow the inventory through, then somebody might be mad at me. Like, operations would be like, we have too much inventory. We're overloaded with inventory. And so they might be mad. But if I wrote off the inventory or said we need to get rid of the inventory, merchandise might be mad because it's their P&L, you know. So it was constantly weighing decisions based on data and the information that I had as objectively as possible, but recognizing that it wasn't a popularity contest. Mm-hmm. So it was fun. It was exhilarating. I made a lot of mistakes, but I'm a firm believer that mistakes are learning opportunities.
Yeah,
and they redirect you. And if you lean into them, the faster you lean into a mistake and try and learn from it, the faster you rebound and you're even better. Right.
Exactly.
Wow. That is, I could say that. So I heard this, I think even in a deeper
you did.
Or more detailed version of this. And I was just taken by it. I have to say, thank you so much for that. Wow.
Yeah.
So powerful.
Yeah. I just like to see so many,
yeah.
where you started and where you went and where you are.
Yeah.
I like seeing that transition because you can kind of see and hear in certain points of the story where you kind of realize something and you ran with it and it worked for you and that helped you grow and step into your next role.
And it wasn't linear, right? And from Walmart, I actually left Walmart in 2024, which I never thought would happen. And it was my choice to leave, but it still was the hardest thing I think I've ever done.
How long did you work for them?
Or with 7 them? Years.
7 years, okay.
Uh-huh. No. Which isn't a lifetime, but for me, it was...
7 years is still a pretty time to invest.
It's a good commitment, right? Like, sure. And I bled blue and wanted to work there my whole life. And I reached a place where I recognized that I didn't know where Walmart ended and I began, or where I ended and Walmart began, because I was so intertwined, like just my identity. When people asked me who I was, it was like, I work at Walmart. It wasn't, I'm a wife, I'm a mom, I'm, you know, active member of my community. It was Walmart, Walmart, Walmart. And if Walmart called and said, hey, we need you to hop on a flight, the answer was yes, as my bag was packed. And didn't matter if Maddie had a volleyball game or whatever, it was, Walmart needs me, I need to go. And so my priorities were a little out of whack. But I'm fiercely loyal. But I took an opportunity to go to a different company. And I recognized pretty quickly that that company wasn't Walmart. It's not good or bad, just different, gave me different perspective. Mm-hmm. And worked there about a year and a half and just recently went through a layoff. And most people are like, I'm so sorry. I'd never been laid off before. Avoided it the whole time I was at Walmart. They call it getting displaced or mm-hmm. impacted at mm-hmm. Walmart, mm-hmm. Where many people, a part of the organization, were laid off due to economic headwinds and things like that. And it was an inflection point for me. One of those twists in the road to where I recognized that I had an opportunity and that I got to choose what was next. And
yeah. Ooh, I like that.
That is awesome. Yeah. Yes.
And I'll tell you, like the first week, I spent a day feeling all the feelings of not working at this place anymore. And even though I had this plan that I was going to work 10 more years and then retire, and by definition of retire for me was do work that I was passionate about mm-hmm. that may not be as highly paid or highly compensated, but it was like the heart work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like what you wanted, right? Mm-hmm. Like what you were going to feel.
Fills you up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And my plan was, 10 years, and this is what I was going to do. And after a day of like grieving the fact that I wasn't going to work at this company anymore, the second day, I started thinking about if I was talking to my daughters and they were going through this, what would I tell them? And I started writing. And I ended up in 2 days writing a book. And the book loosely, it is a book, I guess, it's a reflection journal. And the reflection journal is about a page of story of what I would say to someone that was at a crossroads or experiencing loss or grieving or trying to figure out their identity.
Sure.
But personal enough that it feels like I'm speaking to my kiddo or my dearest friend or my relative,
mm-hmm.
and with some prompts along the way to help unpack the feelings and get direction. And as luck would have it, I've never written a book, unless you count like fourth grade when I had like a poem published and like a, like one of those school things.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, God, like, I see you. And so that book is in the process of being published. And
that's
then,
incredible. Wow. Amazing. I feel like you go through these moments in your life for a reason. You know, these challenges happen for whatever reason. And I think that maybe that plan you had for yourself was the 10-year plan, right? I just think that maybe it was meant to happen sooner, way sooner rather than later. And I mm-hmm. think God just maybe put something in front of you and flipped the switch and said, hey, take advantage of this now and see where it goes. And you're going to publish a book. That's cool. That's amazing.
Yeah. What you're saying is exactly what's happened. And so after 2 days, 3 days, I'd worked through this journal myself, these are the questions, these are the prompts, but also thinking about what my answers would be. And where it led me was I'd been negotiating with God in that, oh God, let me pay off my house first, and then I'll do this work. Like, I know I'm being called to do this. I know that this is where my heart is, but I'll do it as soon as I'm done paying these
with
bills
X,
and
y,
things.
Or Z.
Yeah. And so then God's like, how about now? And I got laid on my heart to build a website. And build a website for me was like, I've never built a website. I don't know how to build a website. And but God, right? Like AI exists and you can do anything with AI.
Yeah.
And built a website of what my company landing page and things like that would look like if I did this, thinking still just dreaming. And as push comes to shove, I told a couple of friends, a woman reached out to me that I hadn't talked to in several years and asked me about my passion project and how she could help. And next thing I know, I've got a LinkedIn page, a Facebook page, an Instagram page, and they're sharing my website and it's being reshared and reshared and reshared and reshared. And I was like, still in this place of like, I knew God was saying, what about now? And I was like, cool, God, like, sounds good. You know, well, if people call about jobs or whatever, like maybe this is part-time, maybe this is a side gig, whatever.
Yeah.
But as soon as it shared, my calendar starts getting booked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. Right? And the woman that called me from Kansas City shared that she had her doctorate in career counseling and positive leadership. And she's like, I'm in this with you. And I'm like, what? And then I have some connections that told other people. And there's a counselor at the Joshua Center that reached out and said, tell me the difference between counseling and what you're doing, because I have a master's in counseling. And so she's like, is this counseling? And I said, no. Mm-hmm. Counseling to me is helping people survive, like helping them through hard times, helping them through the yuck to get to status quo or to get to a foundation. It's where the ground is like sand, basically. And for me, life coaching, career coaching can only happen when you're on solid ground or rock, you know. It's where you build.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm a huge supporter of mental health, huge advocate for that support. But these work hand in hand and are different. So it's once, you know, therapy gets you to status quo and gets you to one foot in front of the other and survival, then it's like, okay, how do we build towards potential? And for me, that's my gift. That is what I'm supposed to do, is to help people and to help teams find what sets their soul on fire and aligns with their purpose and their passion and just changes everything.
It does. Yeah, it does.
It's your bread and butter then.
Yeah.
Bread and butter.
Right. So now I'm at this place of like, okay, so what do I do with this? And what does this look like? And Alex, who's quickly become a partner in crime, lives in Kansas City, and I worked with at the community college in Kansas, who reached out just in the midst of this, not knowing the layoff, not knowing any of these things. She's super passionate about podcasting. Mm-hmm. And one of her dreams, it was funny, when she was talking to me about what she could do to help Soulfire, she's like, I could be a coach, I could be a guide, I could advise people. And I said, that's great, but I want you to go back and I want you to do some self-exploration and figure out like, what should you be doing? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the passions that are inside of you that maybe you haven't explored? Or what are the things that you feel like are your gifts? And she said, she came back and said, I want to have my own podcast. I want to be, give at least one motivational speech, like a TED talk or, you know, at a school or somewhere. And something else, maybe it was write a book or something like that. And I never would have pegged her for this because she's kind of introverted, seemingly more quiet, soft-spoken. And I was like, yes. And so I was like, we could have a Soulfire podcast. Yep. And so hence the path that leads me to Juan Carlos is I start asking people like, tell me about podcasts, you know, all of the things. And one of my best friends is like, you've got to meet Juan Carlos. He has a podcast. He's amazing. Bada bing, bada boom. And so, here we are.
What was that? Maybe like two, how long ago did you have that conversation with your friend?
Two weeks ago.
Was it? I think so. Just two, a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Look what happens, man. I feel like everything happens for a reason.
It does.
Later, we're sitting in a room together.
Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it's so funny because I sit down here and I'm, you know, I'm kind of doing the logistics things of these things and I'm listening to it and it just hits me and I just am taken by it all the time when we have our guest here. And Enrique, you're so good at asking questions, but it's so funny as I sit here and just envision everything. I feel like, yes, we're recording and we have our guest here and I'm like, man, this is so cool for me. I could just sit here and watch for hours, you know, these people talk. Then I have to remember, oh yeah, I'm the one hosting. You know what I mean?
No, right.
I can't just sit back and relax. But Mariah, I honestly like when we met for the first time and hearing these stories and everything, I said, that is totally what, in a sense, Northwest Arkansas is about. You know, you're here for a reason. You're here in this area and meeting these and hearing these stories is something that I just have a passion to share with people, you know, because I think we can all benefit from it in its own way. and just building those relationships with the community and with people is just, to me, is my bread and butter. So I love it, man. And it's crazy. We're almost at, where are we at here? We're at like 46 minutes or so. And we have, I think we've just scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. But something I do want to, I do want for you to mention is tell us about what is called.
So it's called the Soulfire Collective. Uh-huh. And that came from me saying, you know, I want to help people find what sets their soul on fire. And the collective is really an idea of pulling people together that are leaning into their passion, that have something to give, that fits under this umbrella of helping people reach their potential, whether it's counseling, whether it's career coaching, whether it's a podcast, whether it's events and retreats, all of those things. And as this morphs over time, you know, could be more. Maybe it's learning and development where we're going into companies and helping with leadership development, et cetera.
Right.
One of the things that's in my heart of hearts, and I haven't worked out entirely yet, is when I worked in corporate, much of my job was about developing high potential talent, and high potential as the company defined it. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the people that are afforded being in high potential settings are people that come from families that could model success in those type of environments and provide instruction on the unwritten rules in corporate America, et cetera.
Like different opportunities, if you will. Right? Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to, as I talked about, going into education in this different community and how my perspective was widened because I thought I knew what it was like to be poor. And I thought I knew what it was like to not have access to things. What I've learned here is that some corporate structures, regardless of the company, are better equipped for people who have role models in that have gone before them to guide them through corporate America, through promotions and negotiating contracts and salaries and getting opportunities and how to ask for them and how to get in the right arenas to get development opportunities. And if you don't have someone guiding you through that and you come from an environment that hasn't well positioned you to navigate those systems, you don't have as much access. And I made some of my best friends in corporate America through creating immersive experiences that helped people reach their potential very quickly, dropping them into an experience that was meant to shape them in a very specific way, where the outcomes were a return on investment that were obvious. And my dream of dreams and my heart of hearts is to open up access to experiences like that, figuring out like what are the competencies at the J.B. Hunt's, at the Tyson's, at the Walmart, at the Sam's Clubs, at other businesses, like what do they value in their associates? And how do I create immersive experiences that are open and not restrictive in cost or in what circles you run in or what your background is to help people develop very quickly. Mm-hmm. So if, for instance, you're in corporate America for the first time and you've moved here from education and you're figuring out how do I navigate in this huge abyss of this company and through ambiguity, maybe I put together a 5-hour workshop that you invest in at a minimal cost, you know, so that it's not prohibitive. And you leave there and your boss is like, whoa, like there's been a transformation in this person, or it sets you up for success in unprecedented ways. And my heart goes out to, you know, the people that experience hardships and roadblocks and, lack of access to these type of things typically. And so I really want to figure out a way to open up those opportunities for everyone.
Mm, and this is where the Soulfire Collective comes in.
Yeah, that's where I'm feeling led. But right now it's executive coaching. It's connecting with individuals one-on-one. But figuring out how do I give those type of experiences to the community in a way that is productive and in a way that drives such a distinct return on investment for the participants that that it's not, that type of development isn't just for a select few in corporate, that it could be accessed by anyone that wants to experience that kind of transformation mm-hmm. or have a, it's like having a rocket ship towards your best self, right? Like if for instance, I knew in my career that rules and structure were a challenge for me, that I liked running my own play, I liked designing my own thing, but I needed to learn how to work within some guardrails, and identifying that need early on and then having some experiences that helped me build muscles in that space helped me to be even more successful as I went on. But people have to be able to identify, like, what are the things that are holding me back from my potential? Mm. And once they've identified those, and we can help with that as well, then it's like, okay, what if I could select this experience that takes me to the amazing? And I am in this structured activity that Mariah's put together that I couldn't have even imagined. And I'm trying to learn creativity. And it's structured around building experiences for the participants that when they leave there, their brain works differently. Mm-hmm. Because now they've experienced something that has almost like remapped how they process information, how they work through an experience, and ultimately are more productive and more effective in environments going forward. So it's like being thrown in the deep end of a pool and like getting to the edge.
Uh-huh.
And it teaches you real quick.
Oh, for sure.
So figuring out, like, if you take people that lack creativity, maybe they went into finance or, are a lawyer and are really used to white and black, but need some creativity, you know, me designing something that forces them to be creative uncomfortably, but with a distinct goal that they leave there and they're more creative than when they left.
It's that long-term impact, right? I mean, you're putting them in that position to figure themselves out, often probably uncomfortably so, but by doing so, you're giving them this tool or this maybe mind shift, right, to where they can use that for forever and ever, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course,
that large and long-term impact, and they always remember whatever it is that they did. I think so.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Look back and be like, oh no, I did this with Mariah and her. That's so far collective. Yep. And man, I can share this with my friend. Maybe my friend can use this. Then next, you know, it just spreads and spreads and spreads. Mm-hmm. So the impact is infinite almost, if you like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Yep. There you go.
And that's the goal. So that's where I'm hoping I'm headed. just kind of figuring it out day by day. And each day just, you know, saying, hey, God, put me where you need me. And, you know, allow me to be a resource for those that I can help. And sometimes it's, you know, people pay me to do that. And sometimes it's people that can't afford to pay me. And I'm like, the only cost is that you pay it forward, you know, that you help somebody when it doesn't have to be with money. It might be that you take what I've given you and you go share it with your spouse or your team or, you know, somebody down the street and make somebody else's life better.
I like that you say that because I think the biggest and most important thing is, you're not there to, I guess, collect a fee or whatever. I mean, yeah, it's business, right? Sure, it can happen. But the main thing is you're giving them value, right? You're providing them value. And I think if you view it from that perspective, that's going to take you even further than any paycheck, any commission, et cetera, that you can receive. Mm-hmm. I think impacting that value with people is going to take you much further, in my opinion.
What, like Coach Smith said, not worth $1 million or
yeah.
You could, yeah.
Yeah. He said that the experiences that he has with the past and previous students is he wouldn't trade it for $1 million.
Yeah. There you go. Wouldn't trade it for $1 million. Yeah.
I told somebody this morning that he asked me, what is one of the lessons that you wish you learned as you were navigating your career? And I told him, what I know now is that life is more about what we give than what we get. And if you go in with that mentality and you're meeting with a new person, a new perspective mentor or connection, and think about what can I give this person? How can I help this person, you know, and authentically? And it comes back full circle.
Oh, for sure.
Every single time. And what you put out into the universe, you know, it comes back. And so I'm on a mission to give as much as I can give and to help those that I can help. and to share what I've learned and my gifts with anybody that wants it, and just finding a way to build that bridge.
Yeah. Find a way to serve them.
Yeah.
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 Serving them.
Yeah.
Serving others.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Exactly. Silly, right? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's true. I mean, I think if you can find a way to serve anyone in life, I think that's going to go a long way for them, for yourself, and for anyone who talks to them.
And what a legacy, right?
Like, exactly.
If we're nothing else but service,
we're here to serve. Yep.
That's enough.
I agree.
It does. It definitely changes. It has changed who I am when I really honed into like that is who Juan Carlos is, mm-hmm. you know. And I think when I was younger, not necessarily fight it so much, but you know, I think you said it, you know, it's what you give. And I think when I was younger, I was like, well, what can I get? And not that I was disappointed with maybe not getting anything in return necessarily, but I think now it's like, dude, I'm just happy to help. I'm just happy to give whatever I can. And if I got something in return, great. If I don't get anything, that's not a problem at all. I just love, you know, giving to people in that sense. So, but Mariah, in this, you know, as we're kind of approaching towards the end of the episode, we still have a few more segments, but I wanted to jump in here and say, is there any shout outs that you wanted to give to anyone, you know, in our podcast, right? Serving So NWA, we love giving an opportunity to our guests. If they wanted to give a shout out to somebody, anybody, and then this time, you know.
I'm trying to think of
there's probably so many, right?
Right. I wouldn't be the person that I am without the people that have influenced me. And I always start with Todd Carter, who was in Kansas and was my mentor and one of the biggest, most impactful leaders in my life, and said, when I was talking to him about staying in the role that I was in Kansas or coming to Walmart, and he was like, go to NWA, you know, make a difference, et cetera, and encouraged me. He called me, I think, every day for the first like 6 months I was here. And just that support was super helpful. And then coming into Northwest Arkansas, there were so many people. Dan Holter was someone that I went and got my undergrad with, and that's how Walmart got my name. Mm-hmm. And he forever changed my life, because Northwest Arkansas to me means transformation. It means it was where I found my foundation to where I could build towards my potential. Mm-hmm. It meant clarity and refinement. And he helped me get here. And, along the way, there's been Ben Hassan, who worked at Walmart, who helped me transition and get noticed, I guess, by people. And perhaps one of the most impactful leaders in my life was Greg Foran. And I never would have expected he would invest in someone like me. He was the CEO of Walmart and the type of person that treated every single person, no matter if they were the greeter at Walmart or the cashier at Sam's Club, like they were the CEO. And his investment in me made me realize that I mattered. And that was a turning point for me. That's where I recognized that even though I was different than a lot of other people, that I had something to give and that I was important. And I credit him with a lot of my growth and a lot of my confidence. He helped me to find myself and to find my gifts. And then lastly, my kids, Madison and Savannah, who all of my success is because of us. We were a team. We shared responsibilities. They helped me through trying to balance work and being a mom. And I wouldn't be where I am without them. And my husband, my amazing husband, Brad, who has been for the last several years, the wind beneath my wings, he's incredible. And I'm beyond blessed. And Ken Henson is the last one I'll mention. He was the best leader for me in corporate, hands down. Again, just helping me learn how to build diverse teams where you've got a collective group of people that have different strengths and gifts, that unite to make the team better. And learning that from him in real life has been impactful, because that's how I built teams after that, and how I set myself and set others up for success, is being able to identify what is it that I have to give, and then what do I need from others to bring to the table to solve whatever problem. And so I've been really lucky. I've had a ton of people invest in me, and I only am where I am and what I am because they took the time to invest. So I just want to pay it forward.
Oof. I love it. There it is.
There you go. That's what life's all about, man. Learning and sharing your experience with other people. It's hearing your whole story was incredible. I think from where you started to where you are now, what you're doing with the Soul Fire Collective, I think it's absolutely amazing the impact that you're providing with folks. And it's here in Northwest Arkansas, right? We love to highlight the area we live in, right? We love Northwest Arkansas. Yes. You know, you moved here. You said you were going to work in a where people vacation at, right? That's how you felt about it. So let's say you had a family member or a friend, they're going to visit here, our Northwest Arkansas area, for the first time. What would you tell them about them? What would you tell them about Northwest Arkansas, and where are you going to send them to go? What are they doing here?
The places I would take them, to the Buttered Biscuit on Moberly. I love the Buttered Biscuit as a whole, but the Moberly one is kind of my stomping grounds, and would take them there. And House 1830 in Rogers is
so good.
Is it good there?
You have not been, you are missing out.
I have not been. I go by it all the time. I've heard good things about it.
Like, hands down, like, mm-hmm. the best food, in my opinion.
Is it Asian cuisine, or what is it?
Something similar?
Yeah.
Something. Okay. And then Havana is another place that love. That's not like chain.
It's type. The one that's right off of Second Street there in downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love those. The Walton Spark Cafe that has the ice cream.
Yep.
Is a good one.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Seven Brew for coffee. Mm-hmm. Tanyard Creek for an outside adventure if it's not raining, which is the waterfalls like in Bella Vista.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, the
very pretty there.
Kohler for riding bikes. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Man, you're naming some good ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. You got some good ones
for sure. Now, the Funky Yard Sale in Fayetteville is a hidden gem. It is, I don't even know how to explain it.
Is it like a big, what is it, like a flea market, or how is it?
It's like it looks like an old school, just gift shop, flea market, vintage store all in one.
Yes.
Okay.
It's got like 70s vibe throughout the whole thing.
Really? Okay. My fiance would absolutely love that place. I'm going to have to tell her.
Every time you go, there's different things. It's an adventure. It's huge.
Yeah.
But it is a hidden gem. And when my girls and I first moved here, we looked at like best things to do in Northwest Arkansas. And somehow in the Google search, the Funky Yard Sale in Fayetteville came up. Thank goodness. it was awesome. That's a hidden gem for sure.
I didn't even know about it. So yeah,
that's cool.
You're welcome. Very good.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Life changing.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna have to go definitely. I have family in town next week, and
I'm gonna take them there.
Like, oh, I know this spot. Yeah,
I'm probably gonna go maybe tomorrow with my fiance, because our anniversary. We made 8 years this past Tuesday on the
7th. Congratulations!
Yes. Thank you so much.
But you surprise her. Don't tell her in advance. Be like, I'm going to take you to this place that this crazy lady recommended.
And House 1830.
Yeah.
House 1830?
It says it's upscale Asian dining featuring Vietnamese Thai. Ah. And
But the owners, like top notch. The drinks, unreal.
Really?
The food, the salmon.
Okay. Because we were going to go to Junto there in the model hotel in downtown Bentonville, but they didn't have any reservations till like almost 10.
It's kind of late. 1830.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
You'll thank me.
It's a good spot for sure.
Yeah. We're gonna check it out. So we'll go to the what's it called again? The Fable. Funky Yard Sale. We'll go there, and then maybe we'll go to House 1830 for dinner.
Not maybe.
We will go.
Yes.
We will go. Okay.
Yes. I want to hear on the next episode next week. We went to House 1830.
Intentionality.
There you go. I love it. Awesome. Okay. So we're at the end of our episode here. And our previous episode, we had Drew and his daughter, Lauren. So they left two questions for you. The way we love to tie our episodes together is our previous guest will leave a question for our next guest. So Drew, I believe he asked, what is your favorite city in Northwest Arkansas? And Lauren asked, do you plan on living here forever?
Those are really hard questions. The first one, what is your favorite city in Northwest Arkansas? In true Mariah fashion, who doesn't like to be trapped into an answer, I would say, like, I love the vibe of Fayetteville. Like, it resonates with my soul. Love the food in Springdale area. Like, the way that Rogers feels as a whole, like, steep, you know? Like, just feels like it vibes with me.
Yeah.
Bentonville will always be, it's, like, aspirational in the sense of, I can't believe I live here. And this is like something out of a movie for me.
Like a Hallmark movie?
Yes.
Yep. That's how people describe Ben. Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Hallmark.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
And, but Bella Vista is home and I live amongst the trees and in nature and next to the best neighbors on earth. And
is that the Lorax reference? Or
I mean, I love the Lorax. So okay. Probably amongst the trees. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, so I mean, there's, I don't know how you could go wrong in Northwest Arkansas. I don't think I could pick just one. I'd have to narrow down, like, for what? And do you plan on living here forever? Again, I don't like to be trapped. Like, I'm an Enneagram 7. And so I like flexibility. Like, it's something I value. I don't know why anyone would ever leave Northwest Arkansas. I'll say that. I feel like there's everything here. And I don't know why you would leave. But you never say never. You know, one day I'll have grandkids and who knows where they'll be, etc.
On the beach. On the beach somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. Grandma, everything's paid for.
Right.
Come hang out with me.
Right. Right. And so you never say never. Because for me, I mean, my whole life is a testimony to you never know, right? Yeah. And if you guess it, you're probably wrong. And so, but I don't know why you'd ever leave for certain.
Yeah. Wow. It's a common answer we get, and a good answer.
Yes.
You know, why would you leave if you have everything here? You know, mm-hmm. you have the restaurants, you have the nature, you have activities, endless, mm-hmm. absolutely endless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now it's your turn to leave a question for our next guest.
Are there rules on the question?
No rules. It can be as simple as you want or as complicated as you want.
The question I would ask for your next guest is, what is it that sets your soul on fire?
Okay. I like it.
Where do passion and purpose collide
nice.
For you?
Nice. I like it.
I like it.
Well, Mariah, you know, this has been a great experience. I see the passion. You feel the love. You feel the excitement that you're bringing to for what you're doing. And all I can say, I think, and I probably rope Enrique into this as well, is to say, you know, we're here to support. You know, if there's anything that we can help with, be happy to mm-hmm. to ask, and we'll do the best that we can. But we're happy to have you here. We thank you for your time. It really has been a pleasure. It really has been. Yeah. It's been an honor and a pleasure. So
the pleasure's all mine. Again, super humbled you guys asked, and I'm a huge fan. So anything I can do for you all. It's a community, right? And it's Red Rover. So let's just link arms and move forward and add people to the chain, you know?
Love it.
So you guys just started the movement.
Oh.
And we're here for it.
Hey, there you go. Love
so hearing. If our audience, where can they find you? That was the last piece. Where can they find you for audiences listening? Where can they find more information about you and
yeah. So the website is thesoulfire.com. And if you Google it, you'll find it. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. I think I even have Instagram now, all the things.
There you go.
But that's a good way to connect with me. My email is mariah@thesoulfire.com and happy to connect with anybody anytime and see how we can add more arms to the Red Rover chain.
There it is.
There you go.
Cool.
Love it, guys.
So. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for tuning into another episode of So NWA. You guys know where you can find us on Instagram. Besides that, guys, take care and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.